sucker. This is Movie Fighters, the show where Chris Sims and I, Matt Wilson, we watch movies and we beat them up. And Chris, I think it may be appropriate right here at the top of this episode of Movie Fighters to explain a little bit about the history of Movie Fighters, how it originated.
Right. Yeah, because it's been a while. You are not the first person that I did bad movie commentary with.
That's right.
The way this all started was when David Uzumeri and I pitched doing a extensive breakdown of every Batman movie, point counterpoint style, for Comics Alliance.
And that turned into a regular weekly comic book movie review slash recap slash analysis column that ran on Comics Alliance until it shut down the first time?
Until it shut down the first time. Because Uzi and I did all, at the time, what is that, 9 Batman movies? 8 Batman movies, I think? Because we did Batman, Batman Returns, Batman Forever, Batman and Robin. Then we did the Dark Knight trilogy. Then we did Batman 66.
You did Dark Knight Rises like way after, though.
We never did Dark Knight Rises because that was way after. I wrote multiple reviews. Like, I wrote an extensive review of Dark Knight Rises and I wrote a column about it, and people still kept asking me when we were going to do it. Yeah. Then we did other comic book movies. Like, Uzi and I did Blade in the Blade trilogy.
Right.
And I feel like we also did the Superman movies.
The two of you did all the Superman movies. I jumped into the Superman 3 review because I insisted on it.
Right. And then Uzi got a new job, so he didn't have enough time for freelancing. And so you and I picked up. And where did we start?
We did some more ethereal types of things.
I know we did Barbed Wire at one point, but I don't know who that was with.
That was with me. We did Barbed Wire because we did a whole Dark Horse run of movies.
We did independent 90s comics.
Yes.
And we did the Barbed Wire movie, and I forget what else.
We did The Mask.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Boy, boy, did we. That one doesn't hold up.
It does not. But we did a bunch of those, and we did all the Turtles movies. We did a lot. But one that we never did is 2005's Constantine. Because we never did like a Vertigo movies grouping. It got to the point where we would just do these blocks of like movies that were on a theme.
Yeah, and we would let the readers vote. We would have like a week-long poll when we were getting ready to finish with one. And that's how we ended up doing all the Mortal Kombat movies and Street Fighter.
That's right.
That was a fan vote that I pitched.
We would ask fans to vote. And I believe we had Vertigo movies on there as an option.
Yeah, I think what it would have been was it would have been like Alan Moore Vertigo stuff. So we would have done V for Vendetta.
From Hell.
Watchmen, which I don't think that was out at the time. Maybe I'm sure that was actually out at the time, but I didn't want to do it. And then we would have done Swamp Thing and Swamp Thing 2, Return of Swamp Thing, which was touted as being heavily based on the Moore run. And is not. And then presumably we all would have done Constantine with that. Like that would have been a good, like that would have had us set for a while because we did it like half a movie every week. We broke it down into two parts, two chapters.
And occasionally a movie would run into three or four parts. I think that only happened with Dark Knight though. But
yeah, Dark Knight was intense.
But all this backstory is to say, we have never in any capacity done a review, either on Movie Fighters or Comics Alliance, of the movie Constantine, which recently has gone up on Netflix. So we decided that now's the time. Because I had never seen it before, before us doing this episode. Now, we are doing this episode a little differently than normal.
Mm-hmm.
We've already watched it.
Yeah, I've watched it fairly recently, too. When it came back on Netflix. And then literally 2 days ago, we were trying to figure out what we wanted to do for Movie Fighters this week. And all of our friends were talking about Constantine. Because it's legitimately one of Aiden's favorite movies.
Aiden said this hit her at exactly the right time as a gothy eighth grader. And I can absolutely see how this movie would be very appealing to a gothy eighth grader. It did not appeal necessarily to 23-year-old me.
Yeah.
Or 22-year-old me. Because, one, I was in grad school and didn't have money to go see movies. Except for Dave Chappelle's Block Party, which I paid money to go see. But aside from that, I didn't see a lot of movies in the theater in 2005. And second, it did not look like a Hellblazer movie to me.
That's the thing. It's not a... I'll say this right now. This is a good movie. I like this movie. It's a bad capital H in italics Hellblazer movie. Because what it takes from Hellblazer is done okay. And what it tries to do with the character is not quite John Constantine, as we know him. As we all know, it's Time Like Wine, Squire, in the comics. And it's very pre-MCU comic book movie, you know?
We'll get to this when we talk about the movie in the second segment.
Uh-huh.
But it distinctly reminds me of another superhero movie of the era. Mm-hmm. I think it's better than this other superhero movie, but I think it's distinctly like it. Stay tuned for that comparison.
I might have been... When was this movie out? 2005?
Yeah.
So I was working at the comic book shop at the time. And I gotta say, like, as a snooty, pretentious comic book shop employee, like, the idea of casting Keanu Reeves as the most British comic book character was, like, a big turnoff for existing fans of Hellblazer.
Yeah, and by the same token, Keanu Reeves had not become – he had not had his career resurgence yet.
Well, you mean his third career resurgence?
Yeah.
Because the thing I said to Aiden was like, this is post-Matrix, right? And she was like, yeah. Yes. And then I was like, oh, but it's also post-Matrix Revolutions.
Yeah, this was after the Matrix sequels.
Yeah, and this is 2005, and there's nothing that seems older than the thing that was popular 5 years ago. And so, like, by 2005, we all were tired of The Matrix. We were all tired of The One.
I mean, I think, yeah, by the time the third movie came out, we were all tired of The Matrix.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think this being post-Matrix Keanu, playing the most British possible character, in a sort of based on the comic book, but not really the comic book version of the movie.
Yeah. Based on the most well-known and arguably best Hellblazer story, but changed to be a completely different story that the plot of Dangerous Habits is an underlie, like underscoring.
But, like, I didn't even know that much of it from trailers and commercials and stuff. I just knew, oh, no, not for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that happened to a lot of people, whether they were – especially a lot of people in comics, whether they were diehard Hellblazer readers at the time, which I was, or whether they were just like, yeah, here we go again with another – like another Warner Brothers – superhero movie. Because when did Catwoman come out?
The Halle Berry Catwoman?
Okay. Catwoman came out in 2004. So this is the next... This is literally the next Warner Brothers DC Comics superhero movie after Catwoman, before Batman Begins. So we were all expecting another Catwoman, which is legitimately a bad film.
Also of interest, the director of this movie, Francis Lawrence, has directed almost exclusively movies that are not quite what you want them to be. I didn't know that at the time this movie came out, but I'll read you some of his filmography. So a lot of his work has been in music videos, which I think shows very distinctly in this film.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because it does have the very – very McG Pitoff early 2000s former music video director, they're not making music videos anymore, what do we do now, style of film.
A lot of things moving slow, and not just slow motion, but like sort of artfully slow. But he directed I Am Legend.
Right. The pre-sequel to Batman v Superman. Uh-huh.
But I Am Legend is like not quite the movie you want it to be.
Yeah.
He directed the last three Hunger Games movies, which are fine.
I like them. I actually like Mockingjay a lot.
I think the first Hunger Games movie is good. I think the later movies kind of drop the ball, but...
Okay, well, here's the problem, Matt. The second one is the one that has the clock-shaped death trap, and the third one is the one where the city is a death trap.
Yeah.
But I feel like, especially in the scenes where they're running through the city, I think that's Mockingjay Part 2. Like, you can see a direct through line from the visuals in this to the visuals in that.
I think you're right. Yeah. And then, most recently, he directed the movie Red Sparrow, which everybody rightly said, oh, that's a Black Widow ripoff.
Yeah. I think that's a... I think that's a filmography with more hits than misses, honestly.
We might actually need to watch Red Sparrow for this show.
That would be a good one to do.
Let us know, listeners, if we should watch Red Sparrow or if it's not worth watching. Okay, so I think we've talked enough about Constantine. We have already seen the movie, so we're just going to take a little break here. So maybe you can watch the movie if you haven't seen it yet. It's on Netflix. But before we do that, Chris, it's time to do the hottest segment in all of podcasting. It's time for Snack Situation. Chris, what are you snacking on for Constantine?
Matt, I mentioned to you several times the relatively new sweet shop, candy store, here in Durham. Because I go down to the candy shop. That's what I do. Now, in addition to Candies of Many Lands, which is why I want you to go there, because I think you would enjoy seeing all of those.
I do love slightly different foods from other places. It is one of my favorite things in the world.
I can't wait for you to come back to town. We'll definitely take you there. They also have, like, you know, hey, give us $15 and fill it up with what is clearly $4 worth of turtles and fudge-dipped Oreos. You can do one of those. But the best thing they have are these Rice Krispie treats. These crispy cake treats, they call them. And they are done in various styles. So they'll have some with, like, Fruit Loops in them, or some that have, like, pretzels and stuff in them. They're very fancy and tricked out. I asked about them, and the person behind the counter was like, yeah, we use 40% more marshmallow than the usual Rice Krispie. Which I love, because it's a very specific number. That means it's exactly what they do. And I also love that they were trying to figure out how to make Rice Krispie treats better, and they were like, put more marshmallow in it. So my favorite kind, my go-to, is the Oreo. And the way this works, Matt, is it's a Rice Krispie treat, but they've cut it in half and between like slices, and then between the two, there's cookies and cream filling with Oreos, and then they embed an Oreo on top of the Rice Krispie treat. I'm actually going to send you a photograph of this because it is an attractive confection. I think.
How about you put the photo up on the Tumblr? Remember that the Tumblr exists and put a photo of this up on the Tumblr.
Ooh, that's – you're asking me to do a lot.
Buddy, maybe halfway.
I have been saving it for when we talk about Constantine, even though I know that we – are not actually going to watch the movie, which is when I was planning on eating the snack. I did that again last night. Matt, what are you snacking on?
Well, Chris, what I'm snacking on, and I'm actually going to do it probably after we record, because we're not watching the movie while we're recording, but rest assured, I'm going to have some, is the other night, we just decided we wanted some straight-up chocolate ice cream from the grocery store. It's summertime, late summer, dog days, August. Best time for ice cream. So we just got some good old Friendly's chocolate ice cream from the grocery store. I've got half a gallon sitting in my fridge right now, sitting in my freezer. I'm going to scoop some out. Have a bowl.
That sounds delightful. You know what I like to do? You know what my go-to, like, it's summertime now? That's Friday night DQ, baby.
I love a Friday Night DQ. I also love Friday Night DQ. I love to go to the Sonic and get a like their version of a Blizzard.
That's a blast.
A Sonic blast.
Yeah.
You can get a little mini that's like not too much ice cream. And they put that whipped cream on top.
I don't know where a Sonic is in town. I mean, I'm sure. I know there is one. It's North Carolina.
Yeah, there's a Sonic somewhere. There's a Sonic.
But I know where that DQ is, and now I might talk myself into DQ tonight.
The Sonic is right next to my house, so I'm there probably once a week.
You know what I would genuinely like to hear?
What's that?
I want to hear our listeners like go to summer snack treats.
Yeah. Why don't you email us at moviefighterscast@gmail.com and let us know your go-to summer treats. Maybe we'll do a little BOCO where we just read those out.
I would and maybe eat them. That's an episode of Snack Situation, but I mean, I'll probably be hungry.
All right, everybody. That's Snack Situation. We're going to take a little break. If you want to watch Constantine, you can do it on Netflix right now. We've already seen it. So you're just going to hear a little musical interlude and an ad, and then you're going to come back, and we're going to talk about what happens in Constantine.
All right, Matt, say what you just said to me.
So we took a little bit of a break for Chris to eat his Rice Krispie treat, and we got into a conversation about ice cream. And Chris said he likes to go to the grocery store and buy coffee ice cream.
That coffee ice cream is what I buy if I go to the grocery store and I buy ice cream.
And I just offhandedly said, I don't totally understand coffee ice cream. To which he said, well, it's weird because you like iced coffee. And I said, well, I also like Sundrop, but I don't know if I want Sundrop flavored ice cream.
Madness. Because first of all, that would be a sorbet.
Or a sherbet.
Or a sherbet. It would. And also, I think you would like it. I think you would like a smooth, creamy Sundrop. Just sherbet.
Maybe I would. Anyway, we're back to watching.
Also, coffee ice cream delicious.
I like a mocha. I like the coffee to be dulled a little bit with some chocolate.
Okay, next time you come into town. It's weird because we're going to get a lot of food next time you come into town. That's basically going to have to be the purpose of your visit.
Okay.
We're going to go to the sweet shop.
A food trip, yeah.
We're going to go to the parlor, and you're going to get a Vietnamese coffee ice cream. And then we'll maybe get some pizza. Because last time you were here, we ate Domino's pizza, and that was not the best.
Not the best. We did have some good pizza in Winston-Salem. Okay. We are back from not watching Constantine, because we already watched it. But I'm going to actually wait until our final thoughts to reveal the mid-2000s superhero movie that I thought this movie was like. And I think we should just jump into talking about the stuff that happens in this movie. Because there's a lot of stuff going on in this movie from the jump.
Oh, yeah.
This movie's juggling three different plot lines from the very beginning.
It does do a lot. I do think it does a pretty satisfactory job of bringing them all together at the end. But yeah, this whole intro sequence feels like it's not going to come back for a long time.
So, plot the first.
We start with text.
That's right. We get some text about a standing wager deal competition between God and the devil himself about the state of mankind's souls. Angels and demons cannot come to Earth. That is against the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So the only supernatural beings that can do anything on the planet are hybrids that Constantine refers to as half-breeds.
Mm-hmm.
They're either half demons or half angels. So,
which we're not quite sure how we get those if demons and angels can't come to Earth, but okay. Maybe like, they're left over from Bible times.
They're left over from before the deal, before the wager, we'll say. Because they do seem to be functionally immortal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, cut to a work site in Mexico.
Yeah, this actually happens first. Because the first text we get on screen, we get a Vertigo logo, which is kind of fun to see. And then we get, he who possesses the Spear of Destiny holds the fate of the world in his hands.
That's right.
The Spear of Destiny has been missing since the end of World War II.
There's a group of workers who are essentially doing an excavation. But it's not like a super academic excavation. It's more like grave robbing, to be honest.
Yeah. It's very difficult to tell where they're supposed to be, because it looks like something from Fallout. Because they're, like, at the bottom of a quarry, and then there's, like, this weird brutalist parking garage, but it has, like, giant concrete crosses on it.
Also, it would make more sense for them to be in Argentina than Mexico, but we'll get to why in a second.
Yeah. So, there's a hole in the ground, dude reaches in, and he pulls out a Nazi flag.
Yes, this guy's name is Manuel. Mm-hmm. He pulls out a Nazi flag. He opens up the Nazi flag, and inside he finds what is supposed to be a spearhead, which is the head of the Spear of Destiny, mm-hmm. but which kind of looks just like a fancy dagger.
Yeah, it's a reasonable spearhead, I think.
Either way, he sees this. He immediately loses himself.
He turns into Gollum.
Yes.
First thing. Like because he's like crouching down and he's holding it and then he like clutches it to him and looks over his shoulder and like.
Yeah, and he's kind of like making sure nobody's going to take it from him. Mm-hmm. And he starts leaving the site, walking away. People are calling after him, Manuel, where are you going? Then he gets hit by a truck.
He gets hit by two trucks.
And
this is an extremely good. Oh no, it's just one. It's just one. Yeah,
but I don't know if you have ever seen the video for a song by the band Uncle, "Rabbit in Your Headlights." That is a video where a guy continually gets hit by cars, and then the last car he gets hit by, it smashes into him. He doesn't move, and the car smashes to pieces.
Yeah.
It seems like Francis Lawrence has seen that video, because that's what happens.
Yeah, it hits him like he's a concrete post.
Yes.
And then he gets a weird, like, demon sign on his wrist, and then he gets up and walks away with the Spear of Destiny.
And that's the last we see of the Spear of Destiny for a while.
For about an hour and a half, to TBQH.
Cut to John Constantine out on the job.
Here's the first bad comic booky thing about this movie. Because this movie absolutely suffered from somebody at Warner Brothers being like, they're not going to know it's a comic book. They're not going to know if you don't do these things. Because he's in Angel City, which is a bit on the nose.
A bit on the nose, yes.
Yeah. So rather than, like, John Constantine being in London, we have Keanu Reeves as John Constantine in Angel City. So if you're, like, going in expecting this to be a Hellblazer movie, then things are not going great. Then we see Keanu Reeves and his trench coat's the wrong color, so I'm out.
Yeah, it's not the tan trench coat.
Yeah.
It's black.
Yeah.
And Angel City is this very nondescript place.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite London. It's not quite L.A. It's just a city.
Yeah, it's that city from Blade 3 where David Goyer had the newspaper guy speak Esperanto because he wanted it to be like feel like that city could be anywhere, except it actually feels like that is not a city.
Also, it has to be believable for Manuel to walk there from Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's take him a few days in movie time to do it, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's Los Angeles, but for some reason they call it Angel City, it has to be some dude at Warner Brothers being like, comic book it up a little bit.
But it's a much rainier, more gothic Los Angeles.
Yeah.
It's not the weather of Los Angeles. It's not the climate of Los Angeles. And it doesn't – the buildings don't look like Los Angeles.
So Constantine rolls in, smoking a cigarette, to perform an exorcism. Because he's been called in by his friend, who's a priest, who also has non-priest psychic powers that we're going to find out about later.
Yeah, and I don't know this actor's name, but if you need a character actor to play a guy with some bug eyes, this is your guy. His name is Pruitt Taylor Vince. And man, oh man, has he been in a lot of movies. And always he's playing this exact type of character.
Mm-hmm. We get the exorcism scene, and it's not my favorite part of the movie, but I think it's pretty good, except when it's not. Like, there's so much good stuff here. Like,
well, it definitely feels like the movie is trying to say, hey, it's an exorcism scene. You know what's going to happen with this, right? You've seen The Exorcist, but what if it's different?
Yeah.
What if we subvert your expectations?
So Constantine comes in, and he pulls a curtain down, and there's, like, sunlight falling on the bed where this girl is possessed. And he pulls out various, like, little holy charms until he gets one that the shadow is cast on the possessed girl, and she freaks out. That's a good bit, but that's a Hellboy bit. That's a directly lifted from Hellboy bit.
And again, Constantine doesn't feel like comics John Constantine in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's not smooth about it. Like, this is clearly a crisis and he's acting like it's a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
There's a moment where he essentially traps this demon in a mirror. Like, through that charm that he has, he manages to get the demon out of her and into a mirror.
And yeah, I actually really like that bit from a, like, weird magical level, and also, like, I like the mechanics of the magic at work in there, because what he does is he's basically crouched over the girl, and then he has them holding up, like, the family holding up the mirror behind him, and then when the demon comes out, he moves, and you see the shot from, like, the girl's POV, and the demon hits the mirror from the other side, and then is trapped in the mirror. That's a really, really cool visual bit.
Yeah, it's a nice little special effect. Constantine has the mirror rigged up to a pulley, so it'll just go straight out the window. But it's too wide to go out the window. So there's this whole, like, suspense moment where you're wondering if the mirror is going to get out of the window before the demon escapes, because the demon's, like, banging on the glass. Finally, after a lot of doing, the mirror bursts through the window frame, goes out the window, falls outside, and lands on a cab being driven by none other than Shia LaBeouf.
Your arch nemesis.
The kid from Holes.
Let's fucking party.
It lands on top of the cab, shatters, and the demon is gone.
Yeah.
What a weird character Shia LaBeouf is. He's Chaz Kramer.
He's Chaz.
Chaz Chandler.
Chaz Kramer in the movie. Chaz Chandler's the comics.
Yeah, yeah. He's Chaz. In the movie, his name is Chaz Kramer. In the comics, his name is Chaz Chandler. But, like, they're kind of the same in name only.
Yeah. I told Aiden while we were watching this, I was like, you know, looking back from 2018, in retrospect, Keanu Reeves was a good choice for John Constantine. I'll say that. He's a good choice for the role, and I think he does a good job. And I think if this was more of a, you know, capital H in italics Hellblazer movie, then I think he still would have been good for the part. Shia LaBeouf as Chaz is the worst casting. Like, that shit makes no sense.
There's this weird sense in this movie that Chaz is Constantine's servant.
Yeah, they do not have the relationship that they do in the comics.
Where, not even, like, close.
Like, Chaz is John's friend, and he kind of owes him favors. Friend. He's his oldest friend. They were in the band together, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And so he's his oldest China plate mate. Gotcha. And he kind of owes him some favors, so he drives him around. This this Chaz is like his intern, because he's like also trying to learn about, like, he wants to be John Constantine. Like, he's, yeah, like, the first thing, he's reading, like, a book about witchcraft, and he's, like, practicing, because the first thing Keanu Reeves says is John Constantine is, "This is John Constantine, asshole," to the demon.
Yeah.
And so then we cut to Shia LaBeouf, like, looking in the mirror in his cab, going, like, "This is Chaz Kramer, asshole." Like, so it's a completely different relationship.
He's this weird little toady.
Yeah, he's his intern.
Who we find out later is a supernatural hobbyist. He's an aspiring supernaturalist. But also, and this is going to sound weird, but the character who he reminded me of way more than Chaz Chandler from the comic,
mm-hmm,
was Ebony White if you remove the terrible racial stuff.
You're not wrong. You're, like, weirdly 100% accurate about that.
He even wears the same hat.
Yep. How are we going to know he's a cabbie if he doesn't wear the hat? If he's only sitting in the driver's seat of a taxi? So
anyway, so the demon's dealt with. The third plot that's going on at the beginning of this movie is we have Rachel Weisz. We actually have two Rachel Weisz.
Two Rachel's Weisz.
To Rachel's Vice.
The Rachel first Dry? No, shit, it would be Rachel's Vi. Rachel's Vi.
The first Rachel Vice is in a psychiatric hospital. Her name is Isabel.
Mm-hmm.
She has escaped from her bed in the psychiatric hospital.
We actually see her second, because the first thing we see is the main Rachel Vice going to confession.
That's right. And she says she killed somebody.
Yeah.
In the confession. Which we later find out she's a cop.
Yes.
So it's not like she's going out murdering. Like, she had cause.
Yeah. But she also...
That's a weird thing to see in 2018, I have to say.
Yeah. I thought so too. But she also is weirded out because she always knows exactly where to shoot. To take down a person who's attacking her. Like, even if she doesn't see them, she always knows where to shoot. So she's got this weird spidey sense going on.
But yes, she's doing confession. Her name is Angela. Her sister is named Isabel. She's the one in the psychiatric hospital. While Angela is asleep at home, Isabel is jumping off a roof at the psychiatric hospital, or near the psychiatric hospital, falling through a huge glass skylight and falling into a pool of water. She's committing suicide.
It's a really good shot when she comes through the glass, through the skylight into the water. It's a really good shot.
Angela, as this is happening, is dreaming about it happening.
Mm-hmm.
And wakes up in a cold sweat, essentially knowing that her twin sister has died. This is rather confusing in the moment, because we don't know this is two different people.
Yeah, because we see the first Rachel Weisz go to sleep. We see Angela go to sleep, and then Isabel wakes up in a bed in the psychiatric hospital and goes up to the roof and throws herself off. Then we zoom in on Isabel's body in the pool, and then it cuts to Angela waking up again. So it's really – it's not clear at this point that there are two of them and that she's having visions.
Angela – in her capacity as a police detective, gets called in to this scene and sees her sister's body and starts flipping out,
mm-hmm,
because Angela is mega Catholic and believes that if her sister Isabel committed suicide, then her soul went immediately to hell.
Yeah, which is the driving, like, central conceit of the movie, as we'll find out, because it's going to be revealed later that the reason movie Constantine is like an exorcist and a demon fighter and all of that stuff is because he's trying to buy his way into heaven because he attempted suicide and technically was dead for 2 minutes. So he did technically commit suicide and now he can't go to heaven, which he knows is 100% real.
That comes out in a conversation with Gabriel, who is a half angel, very capably played by Tilda Swinton.
Fantastic. Best, like high point, Gabriel.
Well, because Gabriel has such weird motivations.
Yeah, it's super weird. I actually, the end of this movie with Gabriel is, like, really good.
Like, Gabriel is such a complicated character.
Yes.
And it would take somebody as good as Tilda Swinton to pull off that character. And I think Tilda Swinton does it. Because Tilda Swinton, essentially what Gabriel believes is that the way people become truly good is through hardship. So if anybody comes to Gabriel asking for them, I think Gabriel's pronoun would probably be them.
Yeah, Gabriel is intentionally androgynous, is a probably what they were going for in the movie.
Gender fluid.
So yeah, I'd say Gabriel's them.
There's a real Bowie-ness to Gabriel.
Studiously, in fact.
But Constantine goes to Gabriel and says, they're telling me I'm dying of lung cancer. Can you help me out? And Gabriel's like, no, you can't buy your way into heaven, and people become better through suffering. So I need to allow you to suffer.
Yeah.
And which is a really understandable but weird and tough to play viewpoint. Kudos to Tilda Swinton for pulling that off.
There's a very interesting bit of, like, mysticism going on here, where all the stuff that Constantine's doing is for a selfish motivation, which is buying his way into heaven. And it's impossible for him to have faith because, as Gabriel says, he knows it's all real, and there's a difference between having faith and knowing something. And I think, like, again, I think it's really cleverly set up. It's weird the way it plays out, but I think it's a really clever setup for a movie that the entire point of this comic book movie that we're watching is, hey, should suicide be a mortal sin or not?
Yeah. And okay. Let me put it this way. What Constantine wants in this movie is what John Constantine from the comics would want, which is a loophole.
Yeah.
He wants to get out of either the you tried to commit suicide so you have to go to hell clause, or he wants to get out of you are dying of cancer clause. Mm-hmm. He wants to get out of one of those two things. But his methods for getting out of it are very different from comic book John Constantine.
Right.
Because comic book John Constantine would use double dealing and a sort of jokey persuasion or trickery to do it. This version of John Constantine is like all gritted teeth and aggression.
Yeah.
Which I think is part of this movie being from 2005. I also think it's part of what I might call the Keanu Reeves problem, which is, I don't think this is Keanu Reeves' fault, because one of his earliest characters was very funny in the Bill and Ted movies. But for the longest time, I think Keanu Reeves has been typecast as characters who don't have a sense of humor. And this movie sort of strips John Constantine of his sense of humor.
Yeah, Constantine is not quippy.
No.
Or jokey. Like he's very much a
serious.
Yeah. The movie's version is a demon hunting Philip Marlowe, you know, because it's very like neo noir styled, but with gothic angel trappings.
If he does have a quip, it's more world weary.
Yeah,
right. It's not even really funny. It's more just like, you know, the world's a bitch. You know, like it's not.
Yeah,
it's not.
Maybe not comics. Even Philip Marlowe. Maybe Mike Hammer.
Yeah, it is. It is more like Mike Hammer. So we have these three plots going on.
Mm-hmm.
After Constantine goes to see Gabriel, he then goes to see Papa Midnight.
Well, he fights a demon first, because yes. there's a big demon whose body is made of insects, which we're going to find out is a full on demon, not like a half demon person, which is not supposed to happen.
Right, which is why he goes to see Papa Midnight.
Yeah.
because he's like, hey, I ran into a demon. That side's not playing fair. And Papa Midnight says, look, you know I'm neutral. I can't do anything about this. You can't come in here being all aggressive against one side. This is neutral ground. You have to follow my rules.
Mm-hmm.
Constantine is trying to convince Papa Midnight that someone is breaking the rules, and Papa Midnight won't hear it.
Right.
So this also leads to an encounter with a half-demon named Balthazar, who is played by Gavin Rossdale.
He sure is. Who's not bad.
He's fine. You can see the seams in his acting in this movie, I feel.
But I think it is to his advantage that he is playing a character who is meant to be a weird character with seams.
He's a toady.
Yeah. Well, he's also like a demon literally wearing a human mask, which is how bad actors often come off.
That's true.
I think it works for him. I think it works.
He's clearly serving a master,
mm-hmm.
which helps in, you know, he doesn't have to be that good to pull that off. Detective Angela is not convinced that Isabel has committed suicide. So she goes and watches some security footage of what happened and does, in fact, watch her sister commit suicide. Also, as she's about to jump, she turns to the security camera and with sound says, Constantine. I actually think in that moment, Rachel Weisz says Constantine. I think that is the one instance in this movie of Constantine.
But then when Angela rewinds it and watches the footage again, that doesn't happen.
It's not there.
Which is a nice track. So she goes and talks to Constantine, and Constantine like basically is like, fuck off. Like, Angela shows up and she's like, hey, I know who you are because, you know, the police occasionally come to you for help with supernatural stuff, so maybe you can help me out. And he's like, nope. No can do.
He's basically just like, sorry about your sister, best of luck.
Yeah. But then a full-ass demon shows up to try and attack her, and Constantine runs off after her, and then that's where we get the, what if I told you that God and the devil made a standing wager for the fate of mankind? And gives her the, here's how this world works speech.
Yeah, and it seems like he's in it now, right? Like, there are actual demons attacking this woman. This has to do with the demon that attacked him earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's in it.
Yeah.
So he's got to help her. So he does the thing he can do, which is he gets possessed by a familiar and he goes to hell.
Yeah. Which I actually think a lot of the visuals and design of this movie are minimum good, occasionally great. We'll get to that in a second. This movie's concept of hell is very strange.
It's full of cars.
Yeah, hell is, I don't disagree, hell is a highway in Los Angeles. It is full of cars.
Hell is a highway scene from The Walking Dead.
Yeah, it's really weird that when he, like, it's just like burned out cars on a highway during a sandstorm by Darude.
Yep. And the cars are all full of these little demon babies.
Yeah.
So while he's in hell, he sees Isabel there.
Mm-hmm.
She has been damned to relive her suicide over and over again.
Yeah.
He gets her wristband that she has, because before she jumped, she took her wristband off and threw it away.
Mm-hmm.
So he manages to get her wristband. And just as he's about to be attacked by this horde of demons, he shoots back to Earth from hell.
He breaks something. I'm not sure what he does.
It's like, there's a whole thing about him needing an item of Isabel's to go. Because by breaking that item, he goes back into his body. The familiar that he uses, by the way, is a kitty cat.
Mm-hmm. Satan, if you've been listening to Apocrypals.
There's a pretty funny joke about cats being half on Earth and half in hell already.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a very good joke about cats.
Yeah. Which is probably why Harrison is making his presence known on this podcast.
He's like, stop talking about me. He finds Angela and he says, hey, she's there. Also, you didn't tell me you were twins.
Yeah. Which, you know, to be fair, probably pretty disorienting.
So that's where we find out about them being twins.
And twins.
Also, they search through Isabel's stuff, which there's not a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in, like, basically one box. And as they're looking through her stuff, they find a satanic Bible. And in that satanic Bible, there's a prophecy about Lucifer's son. His name's Mammon.
Matt, are you talking about how Corinthians has 21 chapters in the Bible in hell?
That's right. Corinthians doesn't have 21 chapters. It does in hell.
Yeah. They're like, she writes, they see that she's written 1 Corinthians 17 on the window before she died. And then Angel's like, that doesn't make sense. Corinthians doesn't have 17 chapters. And John Constantine looks at her and goes, Corinthians goes up to 21 chapters in the Bible in hell. Which I turned to Aiden and I was like, hey, when we do Corinthians for Apocrypals, remind me, I need to say that.
What's weird is there's not just one Corinthians.
Yeah, well, what's weird is that it's Corinthians.
That's also weird.
It's the book that says love is patient, love is kind. That's the one that goes up. That's the one that has 8 extra chapters in hell.
And
why would it not be one of the prophets?
I don't know. That's also a letter by Paul.
Yeah.
So in his letter, there's an extended version of his letter to the Corinthians, either the first or second, because there are two of them, either the first or second, that goes from being about how love is patient and kind into like, oh, also Satan has a son named Mammon.
P.S. Hey, everybody, Paul here. Just want to let you know, I have 5 more chapters of news.
Yeah,
now that we've settled what God's love is, here's the thing about Satan's kids.
Check it out, my Theophilia in Corinth. You need to know about Mammon.
I feel like that strikes me so much as a person remembering the name of a book in the Bible. And probably being like, okay, well, Revelations would be too obvious. So it's going to be something else. And then, is it John? No, can't be in Genesis. Let's do Corinthians. That's the one I can think of.
There are two of them, though.
There's two of them. Also, it should absolutely be in, honestly, either in Genesis or in one of the prophets. If it's in one of the prophets, that makes so much sense. If it's Isaiah, then it makes perfect sense. You'd be like, oh yeah, Isaiah actually goes up to 73 chapters in hell.
Like, I understand that, like, Revelations is too obvious, but just put it in fucking Revelations. Because Revelations is full of shit like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Revelations is an apocalypse. It's a prophecy. And look, I know I am recently a Bible guy. but I know what's in Corinthians.
Like, Revelations has shit about the 12 tribes and how only people from the 12 tribes, 144 people from the 12 tribes are going to heaven. Like,
Revelations has the beast and the 7 heads. Like, if you're going to get Satan's son returning to rise on earth, that's where it's going to be.
Anyhow, Constantine and Angela go into detective mode after this.
Oh, you mean like they can see skeletons?
That's right. They can see skeletons and find, like, you know, a radio in somebody's pocket.
Yeah, there's a Riddler trophy that Constantine gets at this point.
They start doing some detective work, and they trace this plot to bring Mammon to Earth.
Yeah, that priest that we saw in the beginning, he dies in, like, a very EC Comics ironic death way, where Balthazar is, like, cursing him. So that anytime he like opens a bottle, he can't get anything to drink, and he's like freaking out.
That's the priest, yeah.
Yeah, because he sees something in a morgue that freaks him out, and he goes to get a drink, and then he starts freaking out more, and then he eventually will, like, take a corkscrew and carve Mammon's symbol into his hand so that John Constantine knows what to do.
So they trace this back to Balthazar. By this point in the movie, the spear has made its way almost there. The dude, Manuel, has come up mostly from Mexico. So Constantine goes to confront Balthazar about all of this. And Balthazar basically tells him, it's done, man. Mammon's coming. The spear's on its way. As soon as the spear is here, Mammon will manifest himself on Earth. Like, screw the rules to the wager. You're going to hell, and you're about to die of lung cancer, so you can't even do anything. And it's all done. There's nothing you can do to fix it. Mm-hmm. So Constantine makes his face melt off. Balthazar is, like, talked to by an off-screen voice after Constantine leaves and says, like, hey, I did a good job. I did a really good job. And I'm making Mammon coming back happen. So, you know, you got to help me out. You got to put my body back together. But that doesn't happen. He's just, like, left in pieces on this, like, boardroom table.
Yeah. So also there's a guy who, like, supplies John with supernatural stuff. Like, he's his supernatural cue, right? We see him in the beginning. He also gets killed, presumably by Balthazar.
Yes. Also, we must mention, there's a scene in a hospital where Constantine and Angela are doing their detective work that I was talking about earlier. And then Angela gets kidnapped by demons. Mm-hmm. She gets, like, pulled through an elevator. Like, the wall bursts open, and she gets pulled out by this, like, flying demon thing.
Well, that's when they go to confront Balthazar. Like, that's towards the end. Because, okay. So we find out all about Angela. Angela and Isabel both had, like, weird prophetic visions when they were a kid. Isabel kept telling people. Angela was like, no, I don't see anything. And so everybody thought Isabel was crazy, and that's why she got locked up. And then Angela's like, yeah, but actually I totally had those visions too, and I abandoned my twin sister, and now I feel terrible about it. That's when they find out that the weapons flyer died, or the artifacts guy died. And so Constantine goes up in there. That's when he gets his cross-shaped shotgun.
Well, this is when he goes to see Papa Midnight again. Mm-hmm. And he says, hey, they're breaking the rules. I have proof. I talked to Balthazar. He said they're acting to bring Mammon to Earth. Actual demons are here. And this time, Papa Midnight's like, okay, I will help you.
Yeah. Well, I do want to talk a little bit more about his fight with Balthazar, because he shoots him with a cross-shaped shotgun.
That's right.
Then he puts on brass knuckles that have crosses in them and punches him. And then he performs last rites to send him to heaven.
To send him to heaven, where it's going to really suck for him.
Which is hilarious. I love it. That whole sequence is actually very good. It's goofy as hell. I love it.
It's one of the better parts of the movie.
Yeah, because we get, like, Keanu Reeves full on, like, intentionally, like, scenery chewing last rites.
Well, because he's doing it in a very showy way, right? He's doing it partially to get Balthazar to give him some information about where the spear is. So it's like one of those, like, bad cop interrogations almost. Mm-hmm. And he's also doing it almost as, like, a show to God, right?
Right.
Like, he's like, come get this demon. It's one of Keanu's best moments in the movie, too.
Yeah.
I have to say. It's one of the only times it seems like Constantine is having fun.
Yes. Because that is that's a very comics John Constantine thing to do, is to bad cop a demon by performing last rites before killing them so that they'll go to heaven. That's really clever.
So yeah, he had his cross-shaped gun before that.
Yeah.
But then after that, there is a basically a loadout sequence, mm-hmm, where Constantine is getting all these new weapons from Papa Midnight to go fight the demons that have come to Earth and try to stop this mammon summoning.
Yeah, but that's when Rachel Weisz gets kidnapped. That's when he goes, and then he goes to Papa Midnight, because what they're going to do is they're going to use the blood of Christ to bring Mammon, Satan's son, to Earth, and that's the blood that's on the Spear of Destiny, which has been like mentioned off and on throughout the movie. So they're basically going to have Mammon possess Angela and then cut him out of her body with the Spear of Destiny, I guess. I'm not sure why it has to be Angela, other than she's got supernatural prophecy abilities.
Yeah, and maybe there's something about her twin sister being in hell, so she's kind of a conduit.
Maybe. It's
not super clear.
Yeah.
But there's also a sequence where Chaz Kramer reveals all his studies in supernatural stuff, and he makes some demon-killing bullets for Constantine's crossgun.
Yeah.
There's this whole explanation that Shia LaBeouf delivers in a big info dump about like how these bullets are made. And I forget what chemical he's talking about that's in the bullets that like makes them particularly good for killing demons. I think it's just holy water, actually.
Well, he talks about how there's a two crosses that are so sanctified that even a layman can use it to bless water. Which, instead of obviously they have one. Obviously that is the big plan. The big plan is to do a reverse blade, which instead of the sprinklers opening up and blood coming out, the sprinkler is going to open up and holy water is going to come out.
Yeah.
But the way they do it is Shia LaBeouf opens up the reservoir in the hospital and just throws the cross in there, which I feel like, okay, sure, why not? But that's not, not quite blessing.
We're off to the final battle.
Mm-hmm.
Constantine goes to this hospital where Angela is and where Manuel has come with the Spear of Destiny. And also all the demons and all the half angels are there too.
Mm-hmm.
Chaz has put the cross in the water to rain holy water down on everybody. There's just this huge battle sequence where Constantine is just shooting the fuck out of everybody.
Yeah, he melts a bunch of demons, kills them. Shia LaBeouf kills one. Balthazar is drowning Rachel Weisz.
But then, and Rachel Weisz has Mammon in her belly.
Mm-hmm.
It's like moving around in there, and she's possessed. And we're about to get to the moment where Mammon gets cut out. But up pops the turd in the punch bowl. That turd in the punch bowl is Gabriel, who kills Chaz and explains that humans are unworthy of God's love.
Yeah.
So, because of that, Gabriel is going to allow Mammon to take over Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Gabriel sends Constantine out of the room, and then Gabriel decides to try to use the spear to cut out Mammon, but not to kill Mammon, but to unleash Mammon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Gabriel's going to finish the job. Because this turns out to have been Gabriel's plot all along. It is going to better humanity through the suffering of having hell on Earth, and therefore make them worthy of God's love.
So Constantine is at the end of his rope here. He can't do anything else. He can't go back into the room. He's been magically barred from it. So he picks up two shards of glass, or I guess just one shard of glass, and he just slits his wrists.
Yeah, because it's mentioned once much earlier in the movie. He was like, yeah, I was only dead for 2 minutes, but when you're in hell, 2 minutes is like an eternity. Like, time stops when you die. So as Gabriel's bringing the Spear of Destiny, John dies. It's also mentioned earlier that John's the one soul that Satan himself would come to Earth to collect. So Satan shows up. And yeah. Satan, the design of Satan in this movie is dope as shit.
Okay. So Gabriel, as they've got the spear up ready to cut out Mammon,
mm-hmm.
just freezes. This is one of those music video moments.
Yeah.
And then, what's the opposite of a Deus Ex Machina?
Demonicus Ex Machina, I think.
Demonicus Ex Machina, yeah. Luciferus Ex Machina.
Yeah. Satan shows up. Lucifer shows up.
But he's never referred to by those names.
Constantine calls him Lou. Yeah.
Yes. He is played in this by Peter Stormare, which is actually great fucking casting.
Fantastic casting. Because here's the, if you haven't watched the movie, Satan descends into the shot, which is actually kind of cool. It's Peter Stormare wearing a immaculate white suit, except his feet are filthy and covered in like steaming acid, like black tar that drips off his feet and sizzles on the ground, and the hems of his pants are stained.
And he's got like visible black veins in his temples.
Yes, yeah, it's a really, because it's a very non-traditional Satan design, but it's also a very Vertigo Comics ass Satan design.
Well, it's like halfway to Vertigo Lucifer.
Yeah. Because this isn't Lucifer, the star in his own comic by Mike Carey for 50 issues.
No, this isn't blonde, handsome, walking around on Earth Lucifer.
Yeah.
But it's almost that.
Yeah.
The white suit seems to be a nod to that. But
there's also a lot of really interesting, like there's an interesting lack of visual continuity with Satan, because he pulls up a chair, like John's like on the floor with his back to a wall, and Satan pulls up a chair and like sits in it, and then like occasionally it'll cut to a close up of John, and that instant Satan will be leaning into the shot out of the chair, like in a way that I think is intentionally like, oh, this is the devil doing devil stuff. He weirdly is a very meet you at the crossroads devil.
Yeah, and he's also, like, he kind of doesn't give a fuck, which I really like about this characterization of Lucifer.
Yeah.
Like, he shows up to collect Constantine's soul, but he's also kind of, like, nonchalant about it. He's kind of cool about it.
Mm-hmm.
Until he – it's one of those things where, like, the bad guy is cool and collected until he's not.
Yeah.
I love that kind of bad guy, where he's, like – he gets backed into a corner and then he just gets mad.
Yeah.
Because it's fun to see those characters get mad. And that's what happens to Lucifer here, because he shows up and he's talking to Constantine. And this is also one of the moments in the movie where Constantine feels the most like comics John Constantine, because he's got an ace up his sleeve that he takes a little while to reveal.
Mm-hmm. Lucifer stops Mammon from coming to Earth. And like, there's a cool shot where, like the beginning of the movie, Mammon is reflected in all the water that's on the tile floor, which is very cool.
Yeah.
And then Lucifer is like, okay, we made a bargain. You know, you helped me out. What do you want in exchange? You know, you want me to extend your life so you have a few more years before you come down to hell? And John goes, nope, you can go ahead and take me to hell. Let Isabel go. Let her soul go. And then he grabs John by the leg and starts like whistling because he's going to drag him to hell. And then John's body gets heavier.
Yeah. It like starts breaking the floor.
Yeah.
It's so heavy.
And then he starts ascending into heaven while flipping the bird.
because he sacrificed his soul to save somebody else's. He did something that wasn't selfish.
He performed an act of self-sacrifice. And so now he's going to go to heaven for eternity. But Satan is like, fuck that. And reaches into his lungs and pulls out the cancer and drops it.
Yep.
And heals it.
Like the cancer shown here is like black goop.
Yeah. It is
Satan's.
It's the same stuff on his feet. Like visually, which I think is a really nice way to tie it in.
And then he says, okay, I'm gonna let you hang yourself. I'm not gonna let you die of cancer because you're gonna do something else that's going to make it so I get your soul.
Yeah.
Lucifer goes away. Gabriel has been mega fucked up because of Lucifer's attack to make it so Mammon doesn't show up.
Because God casts Gabriel down and burns off their wings. Because there's a bit where, so like, Gabriel's like, oh shit, Satan's here. I'll fight Satan. I'll kill Satan. Cool. That'll make God love me more. And then Lucifer's like, yeah, he doesn't have your back anymore. Which is pretty good. Yeah.
Gabriel is no longer divine in any way.
Yeah.
Gabriel is just mortal now.
Yeah.
Finally, we get one last sort of like epilogue scene where Constantine is standing on top of a building. He gives Angela the Spear of Destiny and says, go hide this somewhere where nobody can find it, not even me. And Angela says, oh, that's how it's going to be. Because Angela thought this was a movie and that they were going to get together. But Constantine basically tells her to go away. And so she does. She goes off to hide the Spear of Destiny, which is weird that she has to do that job. Like, why is she the one who has to do that? I don't know. But she goes and does it. Constantine pops a piece of gum into his mouth.
It's nicotine gum? Because he's quit smoking. It's
nicotine gum. Because he quit smoking. And then he sees Chaz as an angel. And that's the end of the movie.
Yeah. Angel Shia LaBeouf. Your favorite part, I'm sure.
Chris, what are some of the high points of Constantine?
There's a lot of really good visual stuff in here. There's really, really good visuals. Like, the visuals of Satan are really good.
All the demon stuff with the demons in the mirrors and Mammon in the water, yeah, and all that stuff is cool.
And, like, you know, Tilda Swinton's wings. Also, very cool. Also, I really like Gabriel as a character. Like, we skipped over it a little bit, but at the end, they're like, hey, John, do you want revenge? Awesome, kill me. And then Constantine just hits him, and then they go, hey, you could have killed me, but you only hit me. You're a better person already. It worked. Like, they seem genuinely thrilled with what they've done.
Well, Gabriel's still on their bullshit.
Yeah.
At the end, which is great, actually. Yes.
Gabriel's a really, really fun character.
Like, all the punishment that Gabriel endures does not change Gabriel. Gabriel is still on their bullshit. Yeah.
That I think is my favorite bit of character work in the entire movie. Because Gabriel's in two scenes.
Yeah.
And steals the show.
The one early on, and then at the end. And then that's pretty much it.
Also, I think, like, I mean, I think Keanu Reeves is good in this movie, you know?
I mean, I think generally, casting is a high point of this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, everybody's pretty good. I think one of the reasons people skipped this movie, even though it did fine financially, it made more than twice its budget at the box office, but I don't think it's considered, like, a huge hit. I think people skipped because of the casting of Keanu Reeves. Mm-hmm. But generally, casting is a big high point of this movie.
Yeah.
Keanu Reeves is great. Rachel Weisz is great as in both roles. Tilda Swinton, we've talked about how good she is. Jaimin Hansu is Papa Midnight. He's amazing. Mm-hmm. Peter Stormare is fantastic. There are a couple of other roles that maybe could have been played by somebody else. But I think in large part, the cast of this movie is pretty across the board great.
Yeah. Also, I feel like whether or not it works, doing a Warner Brothers comic book movie about, hey, should suicide be a mortal sin, is a bold choice that I respect.
One of this movie's strengths is that it doesn't dull the life and death, mortality, good and evil kind of stuff. Because a lot of times with movies like this that try to do supernatural things, they present a kind of Funhouse Hollywood version of mysticism or spirituality or, you know, that kind of stuff. This doesn't do that. We ragged on the 21st chapter of Corinthians stuff rightly. But aside from that, I think it does a lot of confronting this stuff without making it that funhouse version.
Also, I think I genuinely think it is an engaging story. There is a but there.
Chris, what are the low points of Constantine?
Your boy. Your arch nemesis.
Shia.
The Sky Rider.
That should, when somebody writes a biography of Shia LaBeouf, they should call it The Skywriter.
Don't forget that shit. People have forgotten that shit. Do not forget the skywriting.
I'll never forget it.
Yeah.
I'll never forget it.
Like, I'm not saying people can't grow and change and evolve, obviously, but don't forget the skywriting.
I don't think all of it is Shia LaBeouf's fault.
No, I think here's the thing. This is a good movie that's not necessarily a good Hellblazer movie.
Right.
And in fact, everything that tries to wrench it closer to being a Hellblazer movie makes it worse.
Well, Chaz specifically is shoehorned in.
Chaz is completely unnecessary.
He doesn't need to be there.
Yeah.
And so by virtue of that, he spends a huge chunk of the movie not really doing anything important. Like, you don't need to explain how does John Constantine get around. He could ride the bus if he needed to.
He's in Los Angeles. He could drive.
Yeah. Like, there's no reason John Constantine can't drive. But – and then he's very important to the movie when he needs to create weapons and die.
Yeah. It's the only reason he's there. And I feel like – Jimin Hansu is good as Papa Midnight, but I also kind of feel like Papa Midnight isn't strictly necessary to the plot. Because he, like...
I like the idea of Papa Midnight in this as, like, the neutral guy. Like, it's very similar to the idea in John Wick of there's this place where assassins who hate each other can go, but they don't fight. And so Papa Midnight's is this place where... half angels and half demons can go and have, you know, it's the peaceful place.
I think you make this immediately a better story if you consolidate Chaz, Papa Midnight, and the guy who's giving him his, the guy who's the magic artifacts dealer. And so you have a guy who is like, no, I'm neutral. I'm in the, you know, I'm not in this angel demon conflict bullshit. And then John gets to call him out for being like, yeah, but you sell stuff to people. You sell stuff to anybody. Like, you're profiting off of it. That, I think, would be more interesting.
And if somebody's breaking the rules, then neutrality is bullshit.
Yeah.
Because you're not enforcing the rules.
Yeah.
You're letting one side get one up on the other.
I also feel like the ending of this movie is good. And I think the ending of this movie is clever. I don't know if it's not as clever as the actual ending of Dangerous Habits, because I think it's a good ending that makes sense in the context of this movie. But I like the ending of Dangerous Habits more, and I feel like the difference makes it seem worse in a way that if this was a Dresden Files movie, or if this was just you know, Keanu Corinthian. Angel Hunter, you know, if it was a wholly new project with this exact cast and this exact script, I think you'd be like, oh, he's dying of lung cancer, like in that Hellblazer story. But I don't think it would have been suggested the immediate comparison to what is generally like one of the better and more clever endings that a Hellblazer story has had. Like, it's
well, but I don't think they could do the ending from the comic, because the comic is about John Constantine starting a war over his soul, right?
Right. But all the stuff in this
too many characters that this movie doesn't have.
Yeah. The comic has the benefit of being the comic and having the mystical structure that had been building for, like, God, what is that, like 50, 60 issues at that point? Plus, yeah. Like, you know, Lucifer and Sandman and all that bullshit. The stuff that it lifts, the stuff about the balance, the stuff about, you know, like, that's all from Dangerous Habits. And I feel like you could do a movie that didn't even have the, oh, you know, angels and demons aren't allowed to interfere, and just make Gavin Rossdale and Tilda Swinton an angel and a demon instead of, like, doing weird, like, the weird hybrid stuff with them.
Yeah, I think this movie is full of half-formed ideas. I think that's the biggest low point of the movie.
It's full of things that it lifts from the comics and then tries to change, but doesn't want to change them enough so that you don't connect them to the comic, but changes them enough so that it's disconnected. And I think that's its biggest flaw if you are us.
Yeah, but I also think if you're not us, then there are a lot of half-formed ideas that don't quite connect. Like, even the idea of Papa Midnight's neutral ground isn't explained really quite as well as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of Isabel and Angela having these mystic psychic powers is cool, but doesn't really pay off in any discernible way.
Yeah, Angela, who is introduced as the character who, like, always knows where to shoot, never hits anything.
Nope.
And she doesn't participate in the fight at the end.
No, she ends up being possessed through that whole last part of the movie.
Yeah.
And you know, arguably there's some damseling that happens with Angela.
Because she gets kidnapped. Absolutely.
So that's not great. I think,
but she lives, which is better than most Hellblazer comics.
True. But I think her character and Isabel's character could be way better formed, right?
Yeah.
Because Isabel doesn't really have a purpose other than to die. Like, again, talking about combining characters, you could combine Angela and Isabel into one character who just attempts suicide and survives.
Yeah, and is now in the same boat as John.
Yeah.
That, I think, would be a much better, like, because one of the weirdest, like, storytelling bits of this movie is when you find out, I don't know, Isabel really did kill herself. She's in hell, where she's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Because for the first half of the movie,
there's no surprise to it. The mystery is what really happened to Isabel. And then it's just like, oh, what everybody thought.
Yeah. And the first half of the movie is Angela going, no, you don't understand. She would never kill herself. I know that this didn't happen. And that's like, oh, no, you're wrong. Like, she did. Sorry. Yeah. Like,
and she wasn't possessed or anything. She just did.
Yeah. So I feel like there's consolidation you could have done. And, like, another pass of the script. And again, I think that would have made it even a better, like, John Constantine movie, too.
And another thing, the other low point that I'll say is what I said earlier. I think this movie could use a little more of a sense of humor.
Yeah.
It's very much in that, like, dour, dark, mid-2000s oeuvre, where, you know, everybody has to have gritted teeth and wear black and scowl all the time. And I would like a John Constantine / John Constantine who is a little more liberal with a well-timed joke. All right, Chris, what are our final thoughts about Constantine?
We rattled off a bunch of low points, but this movie's good. This movie's a really good time. If you haven't seen it because you heard it was a bad comic book adaptation, watch it. I dismissed it without even seeing it until I found out it was one of my wife's, like, top five movies, favorite movies. And I think it's a hoot. There's a lot of really, really good stuff in it, especially if you're paying attention. Weird that John Constantine lives above a bowling alley. We didn't talk about that. But it's I think there's a lot of good stuff in here.
The Frank Grimesing of John Constantine. But here's what I'll say. This movie certainly hasn't made it into my top five, but it is considerably better than I thought it would be. That said, and this is going to sound like I'm really taking it to this movie, I think it's better than this movie I'm about to compare it to, but I saw a ton of similarities in terms of structure, presentation, characterization, and sort of lack of sense of humor between this and 2003's Daredevil.
I don't think you're wrong. I think this is a much, much, much better movie.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of there is a significant amount of fighting that happens in the rain.
A lot of fighting
in indoor environments.
A lot of fighting that happens in the rain. A lot of, like, half-formed ideas that could be something good if you did a little more with them, a lot of, like, extraneous characters, and a lot of, like, muted darkness to the look of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And a lead character who – it takes a comics character who can be – like, they face down tough situations with a sense of humor and takes that sense of humor away from them. And to me, that's one of the biggest sins of not just this movie, but a lot of mid-2000s movies.
Yeah, it definitely feels like it came out of that era. But I mean, if you're looking at all the, if you're looking at all of the post 2000 pre Batman Begins comics movies, where things were like really weird and like, let's see what happens, when there was a Bulletproof Monk movie, for instance, I think Constantine's probably the best of that bunch in a lot of ways.
It's one of the better ones.
I think
for
it's,
sure.
It's as good as Blade 3.
I would agree with that.
It's probably as good as Blade 2. It's not as good as Blade.
I would say there's a vast graveyard of mid-2000 superheroes movies that are forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nobody remembers a lot of movies that came out slightly over a decade ago. You mentioned one of them, Bulletproof Monk.
I'm looking at the list of films based on English language comics, but you can't organize it by date.
I would love to see how many movies from that time period are remembered or remembered well, because a year after this, Superman Returns comes out, which is another, hey, make a character real dour kind of movie. Batman Begins came out the same year as this, which I do think represents a sea change in these kinds of movies.
Yeah.
I think the real sea change doesn't come until 2 years later with Iron Man, though.
Yeah. But, I mean, Iron Man was like a seismic shift, and also Dark Knight was that same year. Those were both 2008.
Sorry, 3 years later, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I do think Constantine is one of the movies that deserves to be remembered from that time period.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a perfect Netflix movie.
That and Ang Lee's Hulk.
Yeah, Elektra came out in 2005. There was a Fantastic Four movie in 2005.
The first one with Jessica Alba?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the Global Frequency pilot?
No.
That's in 2005 and looks a lot like this.
Yeah, there was a distinct aesthetic.
Yeah.
Very distinct aesthetic. All right. That's going to do it for this Movie Fighters. We will be back in September with another film. So stay tuned for that. Our website was designed by Sean Bogus. Our music is by Michael Kill. The Snack Situation theme is by Matt Fisher. If you like the show and would like to help us out in making it happen, you can go to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kick in as little as $1 a month to help out this show, our other shows, War Rocket Ajax, the Every Story Ever specials, Snack Situation specials, all that stuff. So go do that if you are so inclined. Chris, any parting words for our listeners?
No. If you don't know what to watch on Netflix tonight, watch Constantine. It's good. Good date night movie.
This has been Movie Fighters, asshole.
This has been a Kaleidos Media production.